speaker tonight, Tom B. And I've known him a long time. I've been to a lot of meetings with him. I've been to a lot of retreats with him. We've been up late talking. There's been a number of times I've gone up to him and said, "Dude, you have really changed." When I first met him, he was the guy in the back. He didn't want to look you in the eye. He was shy. He was reticent. He was me when I came. He was broken. I look up words all the time. One of my favorite definitions of broken is not useful anymore. Sorry, I was talking about me there, Tom. But he called me today and asked me if I would introduce him tonight. And it's such an honor. His sponsor's out of town. And I thought about him. Was driving back from up north, and I was thought about it all the way, what I would say. And that wasn't it, by the way. And a word popped into my head. The word was hero. Now, I misuse that word all the time, but it popped in my head and it stayed there. And this is a definition. A person noted for courageous acts or nobility of character. That's our speaker. You're on, buddy.
Now I just do that. I was going to stand on a box, but I guess I'm sure you can't stop. So thanks, Roger. That was really beautiful. I don't know. This is hard. I love everyone in this room. You've been a big part of my life. You've changed my life. Al-Anon's changed my life. And I'm going to tell my story. Oh, I'm Tom. I didn't even say that. I can't remember my name. The first literature when I came to Al-Anon, this is one of the first books, From Survival to Recovery. And I really related to this a lot. And there's an epilogue on the back of the book. And I'm going to read it because it speaks to me a lot. This book was written about by and for people who grew up in the shadow of alcoholism. The alcoholic may have been parent, grandparent, great grandparent, sibling, aunt, uncle, cousin, or family friend. It doesn't matter exactly whom. For alcoholism is a disease that leaves its imprint on all it touches, and all are welcome in Al-Anon. And because I didn't know if I really belonged in Al-Anon. I guess my first experience as far as the disease of alcohol was, I was telling this to my sponsor, goes, "You need to share that story." I was at my grandparents' house, and there was this old, like, black and white photo, and it's my great grandparents. It was, and she's my great grandmother has this real mean look on her face, and I'm looking at the picture of him, and he's sort of like got this silly face on it, and I said, "Why is she so mean in that picture?" And I don't know who told me. I don't know if it was an Italian or she told me, but apparently he had been drinking the night before, and she was really angry. And I said, like, "Oh, that's interesting." And so that was probably my first exposure to alcoholism because I didn't see it in my immediate family, but I definitely saw the effects of it. I had a rageaholic father, a very fearful mother, and I, of course, I took that in personally. You know, I thought it's my fault. Why is Dad this way? Why is he always angry? Sort of a workaholic, and just not there as a father. And he would rage, sometimes beatings. I know the scariest, I remember my mom said, "Wait till your father comes home." And I know that, and I had to sit the whole day in that fear, knowing. And then the minute he came home, he gets the strap and I'm running into usually into a closet because where are you going to run? And so I was a runner, and I even thought about going out for cross country because of that. I mean, I was physically a runner and also figuratively a runner. I ran, I had a lot of geographic changes. So I was running. But what was I running to? That, you know, I know I had to get out of that house. I didn't like, you know. And I know I had feelings, and I know I wasn't normal feelings as a kid. I didn't like to play with the boys. I didn't like sports. You know, I played with the girls. And I actually played shopping mall. We were very creative. We would take the little sari pieces and my mom's hair curlers, and that would be their headdresses. It was hilarious. But it was so creative, you know. I just had this creativity in me, and it, you know, and I didn't, you know, like sports or that kind of stuff. And of course, my dad, you know, I like decorating, you know, I like to do the Christmas tree every year, and there had to be a theme or something. And but I remember it'd take a while to get the tree done, you know, you got to do it right. And all my dad, I see my dad look at him just doing a tree, you know, this look on his face was, that's not what boys do, you know. So I got that message. And then my mom, of course, she would see all this stuff. Well, look at what my son did. Look at, she would bring the neighbors in to show up. I go, Mom, stop it. Can't you see dad is upset that you're showing this? I remember that. Like, I didn't want her to show my creativity. Like, I was had a shame about it. And so, but my mom, I love her. I mean, she had a lot of fear. She had to put up a lot of abuse, a lot of verbal abuse. And, she didn't think much of herself. She needed this program. And probably grew up in alcoholism. I think maybe her father might have been, but I'm not sure. But it's funny because, you know, my dad would be raging and all this stuff. And the one thing she would say, well, at least he's not an alcoholic. And I remember us, there was like dead silence, and we're all looking at each other like, yeah, maybe he should. But to this day, I wonder, why did she say that? Why did she say, well, at least he's not an, she could have said, well, at least he's not mentally ill, but she specifically said alcoholic. So that was another clue to me that, okay, there was alcoholism in the family going back. Might have been her dad or, and, but I never forgot that. I mean, it was like, and it's funny, the one time my dad did get drunk, he came home and he was like knocking on my door. I didn't know who this person was. He was actually nice. And it was sort of scary because I knew him as angry. I didn't know him as nice. And he was banging on my door. I wouldn't open the door. And but you know, years later, I actually did stand-up comedy, and I with someone in the program, and she said, oh, I think I have a good punchline for them. And it's sort of sick, but she goes, well, he was, you know, he came home and he was nice. And so the next night I bought him a six pack. And I go, that's pretty sick, but only another Al-Anon could think of something like that. But I was, in a way, maybe it was a way out for him, but he just wasn't out. So he would just rage and the workaholism. And I felt very, you know, later on, it's through the steps that I was able to come to a level. First, neutrality. That was you don't immediately go into a forgiveness, but I could be neutral about it. And actually, my sponsor would say, well, how do you feel about your dad? I go, oh, I guess I'm sort of neutral about it. And then eventually he would say, well, what kind of childhood did your dad have? And then I had heard the stories. He didn't share it a lot, but of being taken out and beaten, like in the tool shed, you know, literally taken to the shed. And then all of a sudden I felt, wow, that's, he had a hard life. And it was in World War II. Of course, a lot of people think, oh, was he in the Korean War? He's a lot older than me. So, and how that was a big, how difficult that was. You know, I didn't realize that until he died. And, they were having his funeral and they're playing taps and they're presenting the flag. And I realized he'd tell his war stories, you know, that was that, because that was a big part of his life. That's how he became a man. And he always said, you should go in the army and that's how you become a man. I said, Dad, I don't think that'll work. Of course, that was before, you know, don't ask, don't tell and all that. but so growing up in this family, it was hard. A lot of deflection, a lot of like to get that off from us. You know, I remember dinner time was really difficult because one by one he would pick us out and, you know, what did you do today? And we would eat real fast and run out and watch television. And even today, I eat pretty quick. And I go, you eat pretty fast. That's like a remnant from that. But so it's my recovery story. I first came into Al-Anon actually was I was living in West Palm Beach, Florida, and it was an adult child meeting. And I remember this is early on, I guess, when they just started the adult child focus meetings. And I remember going into that meeting, here I feel with all this resentment and rage about my dad. And I heard this woman share about her dad so openly, like, I didn't think you don't talk about that, you know? This is stuff you didn't talk about. I remember going to therapy and I'm telling all this stuff about my family. And the therapist says is saying, oh, I feel so sorry for you. And I'm thinking, what's he sorry about? I thought everyone, this is the way everyone lived. This is what every, you know, this everyone's family was like this. So that when I became realized I had something went down. And when I heard that, I was blown away. Like, how can you share that? Like I said, there's something on. I don't know why I didn't stay. I think I might have gone back to meeting a couple of times, but I didn't stick. It wasn't until I came, I think I moved to Atlanta and I was going to another fellowship. And at the same time, there was an Al-Anon meeting, a huge Al-Anon meeting. And I was having a lot of this is issues I've had, like around money, employment, a lot of it to deal with my dad, because I would come home. He said, well, what did you tell him? You probably told me you don't need to hire anyone, do you? This is the kind of stuff he would say to me. Of course, you know, the job trauma, you know, it's like, I didn't know how to do it. No one told me how to do it. I just sort of like, so, you know, I went into the one meeting and they're all looking at it like, what's the problem? Fill out an application. You know, they didn't get it. So I said, well, what's that meeting over there? They go, oh, that's the Al-Anon meeting. They all cry in there. And I go, oh, really? And for something that piqued my interest, because I sure was crying, but by myself, you know. And that meeting was amazing. I went in there and they were so loving. I remember the one guy, you know, he said, hey, I'll take you out to lunch. We do fellowship. I never experienced that kind of love, you know, that kind of just. And at one point, I was going to ask that guy to be my sponsor, but by that time, I was off to another city, you know, running. So, how I came most recently, I was in LA struggling financially, you know, having a lot of self-doubt about myself. And I moved in with someone who would take people in because they couldn't afford, you know, like a rent. You know, she'd help them out. But even there, I fell behind on the rent. And I remember I wouldn't tell her I can't pay the rent, you know, which is typical, you know, don't say what's really going on, like hide it and just, oh, maybe she'll just disappear. Yes, I'm living in her house, you know, that she's not going to go away. So I remember the night I sneak into the house again. Hopefully she won't see me and she won't bring up that issue again about the money. Something came to my mind, said, pick up the phone and call this guy, another program. So I call him and he goes, oh yeah, how you doing? He goes, I go, where are you? He goes, oh, I'm at this meeting in Burbank, adult child. I go, oh, really? And I was in Sylmar at the time and something in my head said, get to that meeting. You're not having a good time. You're hiding in the room. This ain't working. So I sneak out of the house and I drive to that meeting and I first walk in and then one of the first people I met is eventually became my sponsor. And I did, he just told me this recently. At the time, he was working in therapy on issues about feeling safe. And of course, I wasn't feeling safe in that house. So I just blurted out, I don't feel safe. And he turned around, he goes, yeah, safety is an important thing. And I'm looking at what? People don't say that kind of stuff. At least I never grew up with that about being safe, you know? Because I felt unsafe my whole life. I said, there's something about this guy, you know? And that meeting was amazing. They would do fellowship after the meeting and it became like a family, you know? And we'd hung out after the meeting and sometimes at his house. He had a house then. And I just kept going. And then I finally got up the nerve. I think it might have been a year or so to ask him to be a sponsor. I come up to him and I said, like, you know, you do sponsor and you go and I beat it around the bush goes, are you asking me to sponsor you? I go, yeah. Okay. He goes, yes. And of course he always says, what you're supposed to say, I would be honored. And that, I say that today. Just people ask me to be a sponsor. We started the steps. It took a while. The first step, he had me write what was, how did you deal with the disease of alcoholism and growing up? And I had to really think about that one and go, what did I? Of course, I was doing all kinds of crazy things, hiding, lying by omission. That was a big one in our family. I never told my dad. I didn't tell him when I got fired from a job. I just, oh, I'm not working anymore. He probably wondered, well, what's good? What happened to that job? You know, I never told him I dropped out of school. I never told him anything. So, not being honest to myself, he basically, and just hiding, not being present, you know, not being seen. And I remember with that sponsor, I actually left the job that I was being harassed at. And I remember I went up to him. This is the first place I ever told I got fired from a job. I never told my dad. And I remember, and he didn't condemn me. He just said, well, guess you're gonna have to depend on your higher power. And that was basically, yeah, I did. And I did, and I got another job, and it worked out. So the relationships were changing, you know, and he would always say, I love you. And that's something I didn't hear a lot in my family. But I say it to my siblings though, and they actually say, reluctantly say, I love you too. They started to say it back to me, which is pretty powerful because it wasn't said a lot. A lot of affection wasn't expressed a lot in our family, or touching or that kind of, you know, like the little hugs and that's it. So there's a lot of things I was doing. You know, I was being honest to myself. I was judging people, push people away. That was a big one, you know. That's still an issue today, but it's I'm getting better at it, you know. And then the second step, which was interesting about he had me write everyone down that you like in the program, what you like about them. And then he said, now take away the names. That's the attributes of your higher power. And I thought that was really cool. Because those attributes are within me too. I think they're within everyone, the attributes of God. And I it's nice to focus on that one, but you don't see it first in yourself, but you'll see it in other people. Oh, that one laughs a lot. That one's really kind. You know, that one is, you know, just loving, or that one listens and, you know, things about it that I didn't really see in my own family, you know. So, and the third step, we didn't spend a long time on that, but it was basically, let's continue with the steps. And we got into the fourth step almost immediately. And it was a very long, it took, I think, about 2 years to finish. Very autobiographical. We went into childhood, you know, adult, teenager, then adulthood, and got really clear about what I thought of myself. I didn't really know. And what I had gone through, and just taking a look at all that, and you know, just and looking at all sides of it, really. I mean, when someone said things happen in my life, and some of them actually did happen, but I could see that now because I didn't remember actually a lot of my childhood. A lot of it had blanked out, and I had to ask. Well, he said, "Why don't you investigate? Ask your members of your family what happened." And I remember, asking my sister what was, you know, like growing up. And she gave, and I'd heard about this, and she said, oh yeah, at one point mom was going to leave dad, and she's walking away, and he said, see what you do, see you leaving your kids, because they were all crying, please mom, don't leave, don't leave. And I was absolutely like, oh my God, like I didn't know anything about this. And I told her I was doing it from my recovery workforce that, because well, good luck with that step work. And that was it. It's like, oh, wow. You just told me this real heavy, and that's good luck. I'm glad I got recovery. Because that's hard to see that. And be, I don't know how it's affected her, but it affected me just hearing it. And it's no coincidence. I think I came into the family around that time when she was going through wanting to leave my dad. And she threatened many times to leave my dad. And her sister said, come, come on, come, come and stay with us. No, I can't. I got to stay with him. And it's sort of a sick codependency, but, and it's interesting. My sponsor mentioned this study, which I thought, I don't know if it's true or not, but the woman carry the mother carries the gene, the gay, the gene that makes someone gay. And this apparently this person did the study and he found that people that have stress, a woman has stress, she tends to produce a gay child, which they also said that also drink also and smoke. I thought that was interesting. But the stress produces the gene of a gay child as if to somehow soothe them or, you know. And I felt a little like that. I was sort of a surrogate father with my mother at one point, a husband, not father, but husband, when she started reaching out to me and it got to be like, well, you're gonna, you know. And so that made, whether it's true or not, it sort of made, when he brought that up, I go, yeah, that is interesting. That's about the time I was born. And there was a point where she wanted to leave him. She wanted to move in with me. And my spouse said, why didn't you let her? And I thought like, wow, I couldn't handle it. I didn't have the money. He goes, yeah, but that's your mother. And, you know, I had to really take a look at that. I was very selfish, very self-centered. And I feel really bad about that. And sort of like, you know, the kind of amends I had to make to my mom. And I never looked at it that way. Like, why didn't I let her in? I mean, it's my mom. She wanted to get away from my dad. Why didn't I take her in? So I was very self-absorbed in my own stuff. There's a lot, it was just true of a lot of adult children. We just get very absorbed in ourselves and we don't really care about other people. So the programs really taught me start, you know, understanding. And, that hurts when he brought that up. He was pretty mean about it. He goes, yeah, why didn't you? And it just never set. I mean, this is the kind of things only a sponsor could bring this stuff up. That's what gets me. But that's what a sponsor's for. It's to shine light. That's what the steps are, to shine light on. I never looked at that at all. And I had a lot of, I thought compassion for my mom, but was it really compassion? In many ways, I think I was just as abusive as my dad. In many ways, I did. I would deflect off of me. I would, oh, look at mom. She's a gypsy. Like she would go out with the neighbors, go with the neighbor. I go, look at the gypsy, you know. And just as bad as, but I was actually turning into my dad in many ways. And she actually said that. So you're turning just like your dad. I didn't want to be that at all. And at least that aspect of him. I think he had a lot of good aspects too. So. And that was more revealed as I worked through the steps. So I had to look at myself, I had to look at my assets. I mean, I wasn't this horrible, horrible person. And then as we get to the amends, he said, probably the biggest amends you got to make is to yourself. Like, I know there's a lot of controversy about that, but I think you should put yourself at the top of the list because I think I hurt myself more than I did other people. You know, I thought I can be, you know, just as I was very mean to myself, you know, the way I treated myself, you know, self-care was, forget it. I mean, I was in the money program. I remember they asked me, what do you spend on yourself? I go, what? It's like, you actually spend money on yourself? Like that's where I was. Everything, a lot of deprivation that came up everywhere, deprivation and, you know, similar to my mom was like a lot like that too. But then at the same time, lavish spend money too. And there was like no, like it was like a child going wild. Like, where's the parent? And I feel that many ways, like where's the parent? This child's like, you know, going wild. And like, where's the parent? Because I didn't feel like I had any direction at all. And that's where the steps came. That's where my higher power comes in. It directs and guides me, you know, to where, and having faith, having trust in that. And so as I eventually left the house, I mean, it took me a long time at 22 years old, and it's about time. I didn't even drive till I was almost 20 years old because I was afraid to, Well, I'd get in the car and my parents would go, do this, go here. And they'd be like, put the brake on. I had to wait for my sister to get her driver's license to be with someone I felt comfortable driving with. It's like, so I eventually, so for a long time, I didn't, couldn't go anywhere. I was pretty much stuck with this. And I stayed the longest in this dysfunctional family. And it's like, so I guess I stayed the sicker the longer. But eventually I got away, got out, and went to school, and that's where I, eventually came out, and maybe not the most healthiest way, but at least I have found an outlet where I could come out. And which is sort of ironic because I said, I don't know what I want to do to college, but I'm getting out of this house. So I just took out student loans, which quite a bit, and anything to get out of that house because I didn't know what I. So I went to school. I eventually dropped out. I went back 20 years later and finished, which was a big accomplishment. And I but I came back to a city in recovery that I never knew before. I didn't know all these things. Because it's the same city. They have springs here. I didn't know it's Gainesville, Florida, which is actually a beautiful city, and it's, I didn't know they had springs there. I never went to the springs, but ironically, when now I talk about the ninth step, I do forgiveness work around my dad, and I was writing some stuff, and I get this email saying your student, and now I carried this student loan for a long time. I'd make payments, sometimes payments deferment, and they said the loan has been forgiven. I thought, is this a joke or something? And I had just finished this work around my dad. About forgiveness. So you sort of do something over here and then other things open up. And I thought, like, is that a coincidence? I don't think so. Because that was the whole reason I took out the student loan was to get away from him. And I had opportunities to pay it back. I got an inheritance. And of course, no, I didn't do that. I spent it and blew it. I go, it's his money. I'm just going to blow it. it's like he screwed me over. I'm gonna just, who did it hurt? It didn't hurt anyone but me. And this is a lot I found about recovery. I thought I'll get back at them, but who are you hurting? You're only hurting yourself. So that's where the amends to yourself is really important. But I thought that was really cool. And just, getting in touch with my inner child and not really having much of a childhood. It was in recovery that I discovered things I like to do and have fun. And I'm during COVID, it's fun during COVID. There wasn't much to do. I was stuck in a little room in the valley, was where I was living here. And my sponsor said, let's go on trips. Let's just go out. You can get outside. That's allowed. So we got like a little pod and we all went out on these trips. We find a group of guys. Usually it was just me and him. And we go on these road trips and just camping and all kinds of fun. And I was thinking, yeah, that was, I remember as a kid, my dad loved to go on trips. That was when he was the most fun. Like we'd go on these road trips and his little kid would come out and go, let's go here, let's go here. But the minute he got home, he'd throw things, take this out of the car, do, it's like, what happened to that person that was on vacation? He turned into just like really angry. And it was like, it's almost like the little kid had to go back and the adult had to come back in. I got work to do. I got this to do. I got responsibilities, that all went away. And, but the neat thing about when I went with my sponsor, when we came back, we would talk about all the fun we had. No, there was, he wasn't angry. He's like, oh, we did this. Do you realize how much we did and such? Do you know how long we were on vacation and all that? It was a whole different experience, but in a way, it brought back, memories of that child. And he goes, when I was talking about, yeah, this is like when I did, oh, like what you used to do with your dad. Because he made me write the good things about my dad. And I had to look at that because I was quick to come up with the bad things. That wasn't a problem, And he goes, yeah, you can't really, you don't talk about the alcoholic in an Al-Anon meeting. You're not allowed to talk about him anymore like that. And I thought, wow, it's like, why? But he was the qualifier. I go, no, you don't have the right to talk about that. So it's interesting. When I had finished, you know, right, about the, you know, that the night he said, you know, the one thing you're missing, the grieving of what could have been about your dad and the relationship, what he was like, what the bad things about him, the good things, and then what it could have been. So that was really eye-opening. Of course, I didn't have no problems writing about the bad things. And the good things, like, not a problem there either, more like what could have been. So I do this long process, and then he goes, okay, first read the good things about him. And of course, I read all the trips and, you know, the fun times we had, and he had a good sense of humor. And he goes, okay, that's it. I go, wait about the bad stuff. He goes, no, just remember him. That's the way it was, you know. Remember the good things about him. And that was pretty cool. Like, I could have a different experience about him, you know, change the history about what it really was. And that was real eye-opening. It's a way, but I wrote all this other stuff. But the good things, you don't know what could have been, but that would have probably been a lot big part of it, what could have been. And I see that now. So we get down to the, you know, he said, well, you got to start sponsoring now. And I had sponsored another program. I wasn't good at sponsoring. I could be very not compassionate. And a couple of sponsees fired me, like, how dare you tell me this? And, da, 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 da. And you know, and I got very codependent on my sponsees, like, because I didn't, hey, we're gonna hang out, we're gonna be friends. I didn't have good boundaries, you know. And I actually had a sponsor like that too. And it's like, he totally needed Al-Anon, but now I realize about boundaries are important, and my sponsor teaches me a lot about that. So I didn't want to get back into sponsoring at all. So I move out to, after the pandemic, I said, I'm going to move out of LA. Even that opportunity came through a trip. We had gone out to Desert Hot Springs, and they got amazing hot springs out there. And his sister lived out there. And he says, hey, why don't you look into moving out here maybe? I really sort of liked it. And it's ironic, I had looked at that place where his sister lived, and I was looking at it, and I lived right down the street from where she had a place. And that's like, wow, that's pretty wild. There was something about the desert, and as an adult child, it's pretty amazing. It can be a really harsh environment, but you got these beautiful flowers that bloom and these animals that survive out there. And I felt like, oh, okay. Yeah, I think I maybe belong here. I'm a survivor. Yeah. And it's actually quite beautiful. The desert can be really quite beautiful, even with the harshness of the heat and everything. So I move out there, and there's not a lot of meetings, mostly women. I tried to start a men's meeting. We got like maybe three or four guys. It didn't really work, but I gave it a try, you know. But not like this meeting. I love this meeting. So I go to this one meeting, which I still do. It's sort of my home. I think I see some people from that meeting. They actually said, oh, we want to listen to your Zoom speech. I love that group. They're really cool people. And they, at one point, they would say, anyone who wants to be a sponsor, raise your hand. So I raised my hand, and this guy walks up to me. And I felt like, wow, that's quick. But my sponsor says, raise your hand. And, you know, they don't say that anymore at that meeting. No one would raise their hand. And that was the last time they did it. They said, we want to change this. Just if you want to get a sponsor, just go up and talk to someone. I go, isn't that funny? I'm the one time I get a sponsor. And that's not a coincidence. This guy, he's changing. It's amazing. He's this real tough person. He's an ex-New York cop, you know. And I'm thinking, what is he picking, a gay guy? And this ex, and you know what he said? He used to work Greenwich Village, so he knew a lot of gay. He goes, yeah, I used to play with the gay guys on a baseball team, and I like gay guys. They're like, but now that I look at it, he had a really tough father, and it's hard for him to cry. And this last meeting, this last Saturday, he shared something, and he was about to cry. And he goes, oh, I don't want to cry. But he was, you could tell he was watering up. And I thought, it was the most beautiful thing to witness, This man who's been so closed that he can open up. And being a gay man, he could open up. I'm hoping to me, and I'm very honored. I could see now why he said I would be honored. That's a very honoring experience to see. It is. Because he hasn't even got to his fourth step. He's working this long fourth step. But I think he's changing even before he starts working. And it's amazing. And that's what being a sponsor is. You witness the growth of someone else, and your problems don't seem so big anymore. It's just a beautiful, and yeah, it's about having purpose. It really is. And I never experienced that. I got two sponsees now, and one's younger, and he's been in Alatina. He's got more time than I do. And he's a go-getter. And he's just gets right. He's involved in a lot of things, but which is good. And that's another thing. Service has really helped me grow in the program. I've done almost all the positions at this meeting. And it's really, it's been, you know, and I've had difficulties with some service positions. Like, I wouldn't let go of it and tell people what they need to do. And vice versa, telling me what I need to do. And my sponsor said, well, you're a trusted servant. You do it the way you think you should do it. I go, yeah, try telling them that. And I've had to leave meetings over that. It's hard. But it's great. And but the steps are, and I've sort of see that as fun. I hope he gets into the steps, because service, it's a good thing to get into, and it's a good way to get into the program if you're new, and anyone who's new, you know, it's a good way to start and get to meet people. It's funny, the first commitment I had at this meeting was the literature. And I remember this guy walked up and he goes, oh, what kind of literature do you have? And he was looking at the table. This guy now, he's changed so much to see. And I go, I remember you. I remember when you came up to the literature table. And he's not the same person at all. And like he was saying, I'm not the same person. And that's what the program does. It just, you just change. And I see it in others too. I think you see it in others first before you see it in yourself. And so where I'm at now, I guess, it's still growing. like I said, I moved, and that was difficult. I had to find new meetings. And it's funny because my sponsor said, he goes, get a commitment, go out there and get a commitment right away. So I said, oh, I don't know. I don't know any of these meetings. So I go to the first, and it's funny, I was talking to Tim. He's not here tonight, but he says, yeah, why don't you go to that meeting? I said, yeah, I'm thinking of going to this meeting Monday. Yeah, go. They need a literature commitment there. And I go, really? How does he know that? Well, you won't believe it. I go to the meeting and I said, do you have any commitments? He goes, oh yeah, we need literature. And I said, huh? And I said, oh, my friend said you do. Go, has he ever been to this meeting? And that was so funny when she said that. And that's the first commitment I took at that meeting. I took a literature. I was taking commitments at all the meetings. I walked in one meeting and said, we don't have a secretary. And it was a little disorganized. Said, okay, I'll be secretary. And I just like, I didn't know the group yet or anyone. And I just started taking it. And you just grow and you get to know people. It's really cool. And it's like, probably need another commitment at that meeting. I don't have any right now. Well, I have one at this meeting, which is the Zoom treasurer. But I've still struggled with relationships. That's been a difficult area. And that's still work to be done. And it's trying to be vulnerable and open. I've never been in any really long-term relationship, but and I think you start with friendships. And this room, I mean, at least I'm out there dating. There's actually someone I'm dating on. He's on the Zoom. I should be careful. I don't know, Jamie's up there. I told him, I go, I'm speaking. He's a recovery. He's cool. but it's hard. It's, you know, it's not. Yeah, it's just, if you never really like I didn't have any role models. Definitely my parents are not role models, you know. And my siblings, they're all in relationships, but I don't know too much about their relationships. I'm still sort of remote from my family. They're struggling with the disease. A lot of it's alcoholism, but now my sister has a son that's drinking. So I could see the disease now just keeps going and going. And but there's recovery too. That's the cool thing about it, is recovery. And I'm glad I'm in recovery. I don't know what I would do without the program. I would, you know, be lost. I didn't have any direction. I didn't have parents really show me what to do. It was really sponsors that guided me. My first sponsor that in sort of this kind of recovery was a woman. When I heard her share, she talked about being in a concentration camp. And she would never, she looked at everyone's shoes. She knew everyone's shoes. She never looked them in the eye. And she, one time her partner was coming down the hall and she thought it was her mother and she was out the door down the street. And I felt like, wow, that's pretty. And actually that experience just happened recently. Like tell you the feelings I'll really go. I said, oh, I'll join choir at my church and I love the people. So I'm doing the choir and this guy, I was starting to laugh. I thought, oh, this would be fun. And I was laughing because you're not taking this serious enough. The guy next to me said, you're not saying, you know, why'd you take it this serious though? And I go, okay, what's, and then we're singing and I don't know the part. And you know, he's singing away and he's going, I don't hear anything from you. And I got up and I said, I'm leaving the choir. And I ran out the door, flew open the door and ran. And I felt like, what did I just do? And it was almost automatic because I felt this guy was shaming me, you know, and I was in it to have fun and I didn't really like what he said. And you know, I'm getting all these phone calls. Tom, what happened? What's going on? And that tells you the kind of people in this community. They're really loving, and at least the people I respect that are really loving. And they reached out to me, and one's actually a therapist, which is funny. But someone said, I talked to someone else, and she's like, good for you. You got up and you said, I don't feel safe, and I'm going to leave. But you didn't leave forever, and you called these people back and said, oh, I'm sorry I did this, and I apologize to the choir director and all that. I haven't talked to the person yet, but that was very eye-opening how I handled in the past. I would never go back to that church. That was the end of it. And that's pretty much the way my relationships were. That's it. You're out of my life. Bye. And it was sort of like that way in my family. Once I left, I never went back. I would actually be in the same town and never visit my parents. That's sort of like mean, not to visit my own parents, like. And I regret that. I think towards the end, my dad wanted to make amends to me, but I never gave him the opportunity. He made amends to my brother. He was pretty harsh on my brother. And he made amends to my brother because my brother took care of him. That was his way of making, he took care of him physically, you know, and I think that's his way. And, you know, he has no issues with my dad at all. Like, it's like, so he made amends to him, but he called me a few times that I never answered the phone because I think, and that was my part of it. I could have, and now I wish I did now, because now he's gone, you know. And he had a, I remember that day of his funeral. It's very dark, the clouds are really dark, and it was an eerie day. And we're sitting at the ceremony, this mausoleum, and right next door, all these buses are coming in. It's like a park. And I go, what's going on over there? Like, what is going on? And someone said, oh, that's that home improvement. There had been a massive hurricane and it had damaged the baseball field. And they were, all these people were coming in to fix it up. And I thought, like, oh, isn't that interesting? Right across the mow where my dad is, he's overlooking a field where kids play. And I thought, wow, that's a nice place for him to be. When he let his little, because whenever he talked about, he had a close friend who died, unfortunately. And he was never the same. They would always talk about the games they would play and all the childhood. And I thought, like, wow, that's pretty cool. And I remember when he died of cancer, my dad was never the same. That was his closest friend, and he lost him. And he was never the same. But when those two got together, they were like two little kids. And And I don't want to be like, I want to remember and have that playfulness, you know, and have friends. You know, he never had really any close male friends. And I can't say that for myself, but it's a nice memory to have that he's overlooking where these kids play. Because to me, that's part of life is play and learn how to play. So, yeah, I wanted to read this last. Like, how much time do I left? I don't know. 2 minutes. Yeah, I wanted to read this last because often, you know, my life, I didn't think it was worth living. And this last chapter of the book says saying yes to life. Slowly we learn once again that we are not alone, that powerlessness is not helplessness, and that this, even this, will pass. There will always be dark nights and challenges greater than those we would choose for ourselves. Nonetheless, we still have the fellowship of Al-Anon and the 12 steps that have been our source of strength in the past. We in Al-Anon are blessed with spiritually conscious, loving companionship on our human journey. We have been given life, all life, to appreciate, with its laughter and tears, its loneliness and love, its wisdom and idiocy, its justice and cruelty, its family disease of alcoholism, and family recovery of Al-Anon. We find life is indeed worth living. So today we say yes to life, and thank you, Al-Anon, for help with the courage and tenderness to live it. Thanks.